Advent, Christmas Eve, trunk or treat, extravaganza, Easter Sunday, vacation Bible school. When I and probably most of us think of these occasions, we experience fond and warm memories and feelings. It's not that clear to me that similar reactions take place when we think of stewardship campaigns and consecration Sundays. For some of us, this is simply the Sunday when we provide a financial commitment to the church for next year's giving. When it comes to stewardship, I'm compelled to think of Matthew 6, 19 to 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I also think of a funny story. There was a rich man who was quite distressed over the prospect of not being able to take his riches with him when he died. So before he died, he loaded his briefcase with 2 gold bars from his private vault. He left burial instructions to have the briefcase handcuffed to his wrist and the key placed in his grave clothes. At the time of his death, his family carried out his orders exactly. When he appeared at the pearly gates of heaven, he had the briefcase with him, key in hand. And St. Peter asked, "What do you have packed in your suitcase?" Very proudly, the man unlocked the case, opened it, and displayed his 2 gold bars. St. Peter said, "Isn't that special? You brought pavement." Yet stewardship is so much more than offering up bars of gold. Stewardship is the grateful response of a Christian disciple who recognizes and receives God's gifts and shares these gifts in love of God and neighbor. This is consistent with Jesus telling us in Matthew 22, 37 to 39, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." The focus on stewardship needs to be based on giving for our own spiritual benefit. The goal of stewardship is to help God's people grow in our relationship with Jesus through the use of time, talents, and treasures. These are those things that God has entrusted to us. The hope is to do this in a way that is consistent with Jesus' commandments. The word steward describes someone who watches over that which belongs to someone else. This definition is an important reminder that everything we have still belongs to God. It is our privilege and responsibility to care for that which belongs to our Creator. When noodling over how to lighten up a message on stewardship, I came across another cute story. It was about a little boy named Timmy who didn't want to put his money in the offering plate Sunday morning. So his mother decided to use some hurried, creative reasoning with him. "You don't want that money, honey," she whispered in his ear. "Quick, drop it in the plate. It's tainted." Horrified, the little boy obeyed. After a few seconds, he whispered, "But Mommy, why was the money tainted? Is it dirty?" "Oh, no, dear," she replied. "It's not really dirty. It just taint yours and it taint mine." She replied, "It's God's." On the more serious side, we read in Psalm 24:1, "The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it." Also in Deuteronomy 8:18, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers." All stewardship is a spiritual matter. Generous giving of our time, talents, and treasures is close to the heart of a disciple's relationship with Jesus. It is one of the basic acts of discipleship. It is also an act that provides deep gratification. It was important to me as I prepared today's message that I remain rooted in the Word. It was incredible to learn that in the Bible, Jesus talks about money and possessions more than he talks about prayer, his death, or forgiveness. In fact, more than 2,000 Bible verses deal with money. The letters of the New Testament also contain an amazing amount of writing about money and possessions. From "God loves a cheerful giver" in 2 Corinthians 9, to "the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil" in 1 Timothy 6. The reason for this is that Jesus and his disciples realized there was a strong connection between faith and finances. The connection had the power to either threaten faith or strengthen faith. Jesus wants our hearts. He wants nothing more than to be in a relationship with us. Jesus and the New Testament writers saw money and possessions as threats because they can turn one's heart away from Jesus. As Jesus says in Matthew 6:24, no one can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. None of this is meant to be threatening or sound harsh. It's just the reality that being good stewards of what God has entrusted us with will not only bring us gratification, but also helps us to grow in our relationship with Jesus. Being wealthy does not mean being rich as defined by today's culture. One is wealthy to the extent that one has sufficient food of good quality, clothing appropriate for keeping cool or warm, and shelter for protection from the elements. This makes many of us wealthy compared to the majority of the world. Since God owns everything, and since we are managers of what God has entrusted to us, and since that management exists for the good of others, then it stands to reason that God has blessed the wealthy with material items, not so that we can hoard them, but so we can use that wealth to benefit those who have material needs. As it says in 2 Corinthians 8:13 to 15, for I don't mean that others should be eased and you be burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Since the mission of stewardship is to help us grow in our relationship with Jesus, I'd like to suggest the following values of a steward as shared in Charles R. Lane's book, Ask, Thank, Tell. Value number one, a steward should be intentional. This means developing a plan for giving and then following through with the plan. The commitment card, which is on the ends of the pews, is a way and a tool of using this plan. One of the greatest benefits of the card is that it helps us to be intentional in our giving. You may have already turned in your card, brought it with you today, or have the opportunity now to retrieve one from the welcome folder on each row and complete it. If you're visiting with us today, thank you for the commitment of your time in being here. The second value is a steward should be regular. To be regular in our giving is to establish a pattern of giving and to follow that pattern. In 1 Corinthians 16:2, Paul described regular as, on the first day of every week, each of you is to put aside and save whatever extra you earn, so that collections need not be taken when I come. For Paul, regular was weekly. In our day, to be regular in giving means that whenever you receive income and however you receive income, you give according to your predetermined plan. I give electronically, and so for me, this means that my money is drawn monthly and sent to the church. The third value is a steward is generous. In Luke 12:34, Jesus says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Further, Paul writes to the Corinthians, "And God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work." God is incredibly generous. We cannot outgive God. But because God has blessed us so generously, we can and must give generously to others, especially those in need. I've always been impressed when I've attended the local Methodist church in the village of Ajen-Kotoku in Ghana. The church is a concrete slab with a tarp roof and no walls. A parking lot is not necessary because no one drives because they don't have cars. It's a luxury. They walk from their homes, which are mostly one or two room homes with minimal to no electricity. They might or might not have had breakfast that day. But when the time comes for the offering, and it's interesting because in Ghana they take two offerings, one for the church and one for members of the church who are in crisis. So at the time of the offering, they dance and they celebrate and they all bring a cash offering to show their love for the Lord. I've always been surprised and awed by how immensely joyful and grateful people are who do not have much more than their love for God. The fourth value is a steward gives first. Giving first means giving to God first and living off the rest. This is opposed to taking care of needs and wants of this life first and giving God the leftovers. The people in Ghana I mention are great examples of giving to God first. When my funds are drawn monthly, they come out before any of my bills get paid. The value five is a steward giving is proportional. The Bible always calls us to percentage giving. The language is generally, give in proportion to the blessings you've received. Mark 12, 41 to 44 is a great example of this. Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which is worth about a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had and all she had to live on. The final value, number six, is a steward is cheerful. As stated in 2 Corinthians 9:7, God loves a cheerful giver. The context to being a cheerful giver is found in the words that surround this passage in 2 Corinthians 9, 6 to 8. The point is this: the one who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. The one who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each of you must give as you have made up your mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. Last week, we experienced the loss of a near and dear member, Vernon Ramberger. Vernon's commitment to our church was a case study in cheerful giving. Every time I think of Vernon, I see him in my mind with a big smile on his face, serving us in one way or another. He was cheerful in large acts like being the head of trustees, organizing regional United Methodist men groups, and spearheading our chicken barbecues. He was also cheerful in small acts of kindness, like when I would find the counters drawer refilled with the deposit bags from the bank. He was like a little fairy who came in and took care of that for me. Intentional, regular, generous, first, proportional, and cheerful illustrate what a biblical giver looks like. The greatest hope this message should give us is seeing that people who grow in their giving of time, talents, and finances to Christ's church also grow in their relationship with Jesus, and they find great gratification. I invite you to find these amazing benefits in your answer to the call of stewardship. Thanks be to God.